All right, welcome. If you lose connection at any time, reconnect by clicking the link in your email invite. Committee members, please activate your video and keep it on for the duration of the meeting. Use the raise hand feature if you wish to speak, ask questions, or request a roll call vote. Staff, please activate your video when you are speaking. Use the raise hand feature when you are asked a question. For members of the public, the name you entered in Zoom must match the name you entered in registration. You will remain muted until called upon by the chair. Please do not use your video. Chair, the floor is yours.
Hey, can you call the roll, Lisa, please?
Yes. Commissioner Greg Reed.
Here.
Reed, present. Commissioner Mary Strickland.
Present.
Strickland, present. Alder Isidore Knox. All right, Alder Knox is absent. And Chair, a quorum is present.
Okay, thanks, Lisa. Hi, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Mary.
Good, good. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes of May 14th?
I so move.
Second, can I second it, Lisa?
You can.
Okay, so I second it. Unless I hear any objections, I'll ask for unanimous consent. Hearing none, the minutes are approved. Lisa, you indicated there were no public comment.
There are no registrants to speak.
Okay. Are there any disclosures or recusals? Hearing none, let's go on to the discussion items. And we'll start with 85053, the review of the CDA housing and redevelopment for the second quarter. Anne?
Hello, good afternoon. All right, so we're going to start with the redevelopment aspect of the second quarter financials, and then we'll move over to the public housing just to give you a little roadmap of how we're going to approach this. So, in looking at the redevelopment, looking at the LLC properties, the tax credit properties, and individual residential properties, we are projecting to end the year about $300,000 unfavorable to the budget. This has been driven by a vacancy and unit turns have come in higher than expected. After the pandemic, people really bunkered down and stayed in their units, and now we're seeing more movement since, the world has opened up, people are feeling more confident, and so we've seen more movement across our residential properties, which is driving that deficit. However, it's also offering a unique opportunity to the properties as well, because we're able to get some units and do some rehabilitation and some modernization on the units as well. So we're seeing kind of, the maintenance costs go up as well, but it's more of an investment cost, stuff like taking out carpet and putting in LVP, which is a more sustainable product and more marketable. So there's definitely a pro and a con to what we're seeing in the residential units. We are hoping for some stabilization post the summer months, as just summer people tend to move around more. So we'll see how that plays out throughout the year. Looking at the commercial aspect of the redevelopment, so we're talking about Village on Park. They are doing well. They're looking to end the year about $200,000 favorable to the budget, because their budget actually was with a $100,000 deficit, is the way it had been approved. However, like I said, they're looking favorable. And again, it's a story of vacancy, but in the opposite direction. The main savings are coming in terms of lease commissions and tenant improvements. So again, these would be costs that would be driven by vacancy. So even though we've had vacancy at the Village on Park, as we know, Lane's Bakery has been vacant and, is changing over tenants, it hasn't been to the extent that financially that we had, budgeted for and anticipated. So that's a positive for sure. And the Village on Park has continued to trend strong. And then also, I just want to point out, they do, along with Monona Shores, there's an owner transfer. So it is a double bottom line property, is what we call it. So we're looking not only to serve our community and its function as a community hub, but we're also looking for it to help seed other redevelopment activities. And it is doing both successfully. Moving over to the general fund of the Redevelopment Authority, right now we're predicting to end the year about $64,000 unfavorable to the budget. However, a lot of that is being driven by the expenses at the Triangle. We didn't budget necessarily for them to be in the redevelopment's budget, and that's just because that, you know, there was a bit unknown at the start of the year, and definitely a bit unknown. And it was June last year that we were making this budget in terms of tax credits. Would we have them? How would this look? Would we be moving into B1, B2? So at this point, yes, it's coming out to look unfavorable to the budget, but we do have reserves to cover the deficit. And then also, you know, is still sticking with that overall like plan of investment. And, you know, this is the moment to move on items such as we have tax credits, we have momentum, we have plans that really are contingent that this continues to move. So that is what we're seeing in the redevelopment as of right now. But again, these are items that we knew about, we planned for, this is all part of the strategy. Are there any questions on the redevelopment second quarter financials?
None for me.
Welcome, Isidore. Good to see you.
And can I just also add on those funds being spent at the Village on Park, and sorry, at the Triangle, some of those are reimbursable, correct? So when correct. We close, we'll be paid back. Mm-hmm. And we also will receive a development fee from that project over the next 10 years. So that will turn around to become a funding stream to the fund.
Do you have a sense of how much that might be, Matt, or what a percent or something?
At closing, we receive, I believe, $200,000 cash, and then the rest is, I think, $3 million paid over 10 years.
And I would like to point out, Matt, thank you for reminding me of the reimbursement, because what we're likely going to see at the end of this year is that we're going to have a large expenditure in the redevelopment, because the close isn't going to happen until first quarter next year is what we're projecting right now. So the reimbursement will happen there. So we're likely to see a deficit in the general fund at end of year. And then next year, it's going to look like there's this large revenue, and really it's a cross year spread offsetting it. So just to be prepared that, you know, we are going to have some hills and valleys with our financials, and it's not that things are going wrong. This is just the timing of redevelopment and how it doesn't necessarily always fit with our financial world.
And the same thing will happen the year after for phases 2 and 3, where we'll front the money for the architecture fees, and then those get reimbursed when we close in 2026 on the next round. So there will be a lot of ups and downs in this fund for the next few years, just because of the Triangle development cycle.
Yes. And then moving forward into
public housing.
Yes, public housing. Yes, moving forward into public housing. Public housing as a whole is projected to end the year $360,000 favorable to the budget. This is due to primarily savings in salaries and purchase services. We've had some position vacancies. This seems to kind of be one of our items that we do tend to save money on is salaries. Our revenues are projecting to end slightly lower to the budget. However, that's because we had planned more reserve usage. And again, that was around the Triangle, because originally we're learning about where this reimbursement would come from and where it would be cleanest to land. So we had budgeted it in the Triangle's AMP fund. However, it's cleaner in the redevelopment. And so that's part of what we're seeing there, where it looks like the revenues are taking a $700,000 dip, but really it's because we're not going to utilize the reserves that we had planned to use. And then, like I said, the primary savings that we're seeing is in salaries and therefore benefits as well. Moving on to multifamily housing. So this is Caravis and Parkside in particular, their own unique program. They are also projecting to end very favorable to the budget. Right now, it's roughly $150,000 favorable to the budget. This has kind of been the trend with them. In particular, Parkside has received from HUD a rental increase on the contract rent. So that is to help the redevelopment because there's financial maneuvers behind the underwriting that involve us need to make sure that we're at the appropriate rent. However, we're not. This is supposed to also fund capital items at the property. We're not going to do capital items as we're going to redevelop the property within a few years. So it's kind of like the stuff that needs to get done will get done. But in the meantime, it's really just kind of, it's adding to a budget surplus because, you know, we're not going to replace carpet if we're going to tear down the building in just 2 years, you know. So that's what's happening at Caribous and Parkside. And then moving over to the Section 8 program. Right now, you can see that our average vouchers have gone up since last year. So we're at roughly an average of 1,800 vouchers per month on the street, whereas last year we ended with just under 1,700. So we're having a higher utilization of that program. And that's really in part to the Section 8 team's end of 2023, beginning of 2024 efforts to get programs that were newly allocated to us utilized. And looking at the admin fund, right now we're projecting to end about $500,000 under budget. However, that has a lot to do with and I apologize because I'm saying this and it's actually, we're going to end favorable to the budget. It's just that we're not going to use the reserves that we had planned. So right now our projection is looking at being $1 million to the positive and that we're currently at about $466,000 positive to the budget. We're receiving higher than usual admin fees because we have higher leasing. So those go hand in hand. And then also we do have salary savings in that in the Section 8 department as well at this moment. So the Section 8 program is looking strong. We've got the utilization, which is what we like. And then also the administrative side is then, you know, keeping pulse with that. And then just briefly at the CAP fund, right now we have multiple CAP fund grants open. We do have strategies around spending them. And we're looking at right now, the 2024 CAP fund has recently become available to us, which, you know, if you remember the conversations last year, we were kind of excited because HUD improved their processes so we could get the capital fund at the same time that it was actually issued in the same year. So that was nice. And so we'll see the operational and admin support in the third quarter finances. So that is where the public housing and the housing operations side.
Hey, Greg and Isidore, do you have any questions regarding Ann's report?
No. Very thorough.
I just wanted to ask, Ann, you talked about a couple times you talked about salary savings. Who controls that? And is that something that, you know, Matt controls or how are we getting those salary savings? Where are they coming from? I mean, who's making those decisions?
I see Matt. Come on, so, screens, I'll let him speak.
So mostly this is vacancy. This is just turnover and the time it takes city HR to hire people back up. So that's where the bulk of our savings comes from is just vacancies. But in general, because everyone's a city employee, they're part of the normal civil service and promotions and advancement are on the same schedules as other city service positions. So when the city passes a 1% cost of living for employees, that ripples through to all of our employees as well.
Right. But so what you're saying is the decrease in employment costs are a result of the difficulty, but the time it takes to hire people.
Yeah.
It's not a dictate by the city of a, you know, cost caps or cost savings. Nope. Or we need to, you know, get within a different budget or something.
No, for example, for the 2025 budget, because we're not on the city levy, the guidance we get is just pass mm-hmm. cost to continue budget. And
yeah,
that's what we put forward with no real changes.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to the
excuse me, Mary.
Motion on that.
Well, Alder Knox has his hand
I'm
up.
Sorry. Isidore.
Hey, yeah, thanks. I was just wondering, how many current vacancies do we have?
In which program? So public housing has been averaging for the second quarter. So, you know, the best I can give you is historic numbers. Oh, I see Larry pop on. I was going to say public housing is averaging 97% occupancy. So that's out of 762 units.
I'm not talking about occupant vacancies. I'm talking about staff vacancies when you were reporting your budget.
I apologize. Sorry.
The salary savings. Yeah.
I see Larry. Larry's come on camera. So take it away.
So as of right now, I believe we have one vacant position for our admissions and eligibility team, which we are actively recruiting for. Section 8, as of recently, is fully staffed. And then our public housing side, public and multifamily housing side, we have an offer out to an assistant manager for the Triangle, which we've been recruiting for a while. We have one other vacancy at the Triangle. I'm just going through each property. Sorry, I don't know them off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. At West, I believe we are fully staffed. And at East, I believe we have one program assistant position vacant. So of our vacancies, I believe four of the five we are actively recruiting for or have offers out to fill.
Okay, so as we add other, you know, properties or the projects to our like, for example, Park Badger, for example. So do you have to request positions through the regular city process? And yep. If that's so, are you guys subject to the same budget restrictions that the other city agencies have or no?
So, yeah, so to create a position, we have to go through the same request process, finance, budget amendment, all of that. We, in our latest reorg, the reorg was partially setting us up to be able to do more asset management of these additional assets. So mm-hmm. we have the staff, or at least the positions, kind of ready to handle that. And then just for reference, in general, the city at any given time averages 7% vacancy. Our department is the same at any given time. Like we're averaging about 7% vacancy, but we're not allowed to budget that way. We budget like we're staffed up or have 1% vacancy.
Okay. All right. So again, the last part of my question, Matt, yep. when the city or the mayor puts out this 5% budget,
we are exempt because we're
not
on the property tax. Yep.
Okay. Got it. That's what. Thank you.
Okay. Do we need a motion to approve that report or no?
There's no action to take.
That's what I thought. Okay. Thank you. Let's go on, Anne, to the audit.
Yes, I am going to steal the spotlight for a minute before Vosby goes on and gives her presentation. I did get a couple of questions in from Commissioner Strickland. I wanted to share them with the group just because there wasn't really enough time to adequately share them with the group beforehand. And so one of the question was, there was a net change in 2022 of a increase of $3.8 million, and then in 2023 there was only an increase of $187,000. So there's two separate things happening here. In 2022 we had a net increase of $3.8 million because CDA received some revenues that we hadn't planned on, and they were one time, well, one revenue we didn't plan on, and but both revenues were one-time revenues. The first item being the bond settlement with Monticello. It was $1.2 million that came in. We hadn't planned on that money coming in. And so we had stashed it in our reserves, essentially, because we knew someday we'll need it. And then the other part was about the TID funding at the Village on Park and part of the redevelopment. That's really what comprised that $3.8 million that we saw the increase of in 2022, but we didn't see an expenditure to, you know, going out. So it created a net increase. In 2023, it's $187,000 because this was the plan. So there were increases in the housing expenditures, such as the new year contract was roughly well under $500,000. And then we utilized a cap fund more than we had previously for roughly $400,000. And then also the MRCDC rehabilitation, that's going to drive up our expenses by $1.3 million. It also drove up our revenue. So you're seeing comparable revenues because we pulled two cap funds, for example, last year because we were able to for the first time. But then we also had expenditures planned. And so it also went out the door. So really what we're seeing is a strategic plan that we've had in place of how are we going to move into redevelopment and how are we going to fund our projects. So, you know, this year the net change is only $187,000 to the positive, but at the same time, it's when you look at all of our large expenditures, you see a strategic plan in place and moving forward. And then another question that was posed was about insuring with CDs. I'm going to defer to Matt because he's just got a comprehensive history on that topic for that. And so here he is.
All right. Well, can you repeat the question?
Yes. It was just to, so we have $10 million in assets in the treasuries, or FDIC insured CDs. So, you know, it's still all in US Bank for the most part. The major money is, and I believe the question was about CDs.
It was noted in the audit that we don't have insurance coverage on the $10 million of cash. And so I'm just trying to remember. My understanding is that the CDA cash, the $10 million, is housed at US Bank as part of the city finances and city monies. But we still have, is there a reason we can't cover ourselves either through CDs or through and a bank? Most banks, US Bank, I believe, has a CD program, or through purchase of treasuries, so that money is a little bit safer.
We can follow up with, probably need to talk to Craig Wilson, not Craig Wilson. Yeah. Craig Franklin.
Frank.
Sorry, too many Craigs. Yeah. We can follow up with the city treasurer's office to talk about strategies there. I don't know the off the top of my head the details of the city's US Bank. I know it's there, but I can do more homework.
And part of it
is nice to know what, because there are some options to make that money safer and more liquid rather than the exposure. And I know we've talked about it before. But and maybe the city has some overriding insurance. We're not aware of or something. I'm not sure. But if you could maybe Ann get back to us on that.
I think Vosmi knows something.
And that would be good. Yeah. That would be great. Let me take that one other quick question. Are the MRCDC activities rolled up into this audit?
Yes, they're considered. MRCDC is considered a component unit.
Okay, great.
And there is. I don't remember if this year there's a schedule at the back, but we have requested that next year because there's a lot of movement in MRCDC now financially, whereas in 2022 there really wasn't. So in 2024 we are going to put a schedule at the back of the audit as well to further detail out what is exactly happening with MRCDC, as it's complex and it's robust.
Okay, should we move to the presentation then?
Yes, I will let go of the spotlight, and Vosmi, the floor is yours.
Welcome. Thank you for coming.
Yep. Thank you so much for having me. So before I even go start with the audit, let me answer the question about the cash, you know, stuff that Mary, you had about out of the $10 million of cash, almost $8.3 million is with the city. It's commingled, and that all of that is covered and insured. So if I can I share my screen.
You should be able to share your screen, Vosmi.
Okay. There. Can everyone see what I have it? It's the city's, it's the CDA's financial statements. Can we see that?
Sure.
And yeah. I'm on the deposits and investments page, PDF page 41. So here's the total cash. And here's the paragraph that says how much is uninsured and uncollateralized. So it's like almost 1.2 million is uninsured. And
okay.
Almost all of that is within Village on Park and Monona Shores. So the commingled piece that's maintained within the city, with the city, that is all insured and secured. So
how so?
I'll have to go to the city financials. It's like they have collateral agreements or they have CDs, so they make sure they spread out the money.
Okay.
In a way, and because they are following the city's investment policy, so as mm-hmm. per the policy, they make sure all of their deposits have either collateral agreements or they are spread out in a way that they have the FDIC insurance. So,
or maybe invest in treasuries.
This one says deposits, so I'm thinking it's still all within the banks.
Okay.
Otherwise, it would say treasuries here. So.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Okay. So I'm gonna just start from the top, PDA's financial statements. And I think by now everybody knows the audit process. We do it kind of in two phases. The first part is when we look at the citywide, which includes the CDA's controls, processes, overall just activity throughout the year, and that will help us determine our audit procedures. So we do all that work in fall of that year, and then we come back in March, April, and that's when we actually dig into the numbers. And after that, we look at a lot of support, ask questions, analyze, we do a lot of audit procedures, and then we issue this independent auditor's report. And again, this year, the CDA has received an unmodified audit opinion, which is the highest level of assurance an auditor can give. So which means these statements are nice and clean and can be relied on. And I wanted to point out this paragraph, which talks about there are, like Anne mentioned, and like where you were saying, the LLCs, there's Village on Park. So these are all kind of like the segments or funds that are included within these financial statements, but Baker Tilly did not audit them. These are audited by other auditors, and we relied on the numbers that were provided to us by those auditors. But that's what we are saying here. It's Village on Park, which is a major fund, PDA 95-1, Monona Shores, MRCDC. So these are all the non-major funds. And then we also have LLCs, which are the discretely presented component units. So all of those were not audited by Baker Tilly.
But they are audited by other correct. CPA firms.
Yep. They are audited by other auditors, and we were able to rely on their numbers. So that's how we pulled their numbers into this report.
And possibly, if you don't mind, Mary, they're audited by SBA, and those are the audits I presented earlier in the year.
Right.
Then the next few pages are the management's discussion and analysis. And again, usually this is just like a summarized comparative analysis that's done by the CDA's management. It talks about change from one year to another year and the reasons why. So if we just looked at very, very high level, if we combine all the activities of the entire CDA, this is how the assets looked and the net position looked from one year to another year. So you can see it's pretty consistent. And then here's how the income statement looked. You can see the total revenues are pretty consistent from one year to another. There were increases in expenses. And again, this includes all the funds that we audit, SVA audits. So there is about $3 million of increase in expenses. And that's why the change that Anne explained earlier, the $3.8 million increase last year versus 187,000 this year. If we keep going down, I'm just gonna maybe focus on a couple of major funds within the CDA that Baker Tilly audits. That is the General Operating Fund and the Housing Voucher Fund. You can see both of them had a negative change in net position. And the General Operating Fund is mainly because there was this Cypress Way property that was transferred to the City of Madison for the Central Hispano Redevelopment Project. And then that's why we had a loss. You know, this 460,000 is the loss on transfer of that property. And that's why the general fund is kind of in the negative. In case of Housing Voucher Fund, we have the expenses that are up compared to last year, but the revenues, you know, mainly the grants, HUD grants, stayed pretty much the same, 18 million last year versus 18 million this year, but the expenses went up. And I think that's mainly because the number of housing units that were being served went up too from 2022 to 2023. Housing Voucher Fund was supporting, serving more number of units throughout the year. So that's why there is a negative. And it's always like 1 year it's up, you know, the hard revenues are kind of a little bit behind. So then next year they give more money. So overall, you know, it balances out if you look at 2 or 3 years in a row.
And then just to chime in on that one, HUD did release some reserves in the first quarter to compensate for that deficit. You kind of just have to end the year negative for them to be like, oh, okay, here you go.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Anne. Village on Park is audited by other auditors, so I'm going to skip on that. And then we have the all non-major funds, which are your East, West, Parkside, Triangle. So all of them combined, they are small enough in activity that for audit purposes, we combine them all into one column. So overall, all of those funds together had a change of about like 156,000 of positive increase. So overall, as we can see, by looking at the balance sheet, all the funds had positive net position. None of them have a deficit or anything. So that's a good thing. If we look at the cash flows, they all have, you know, good cash balances. So no concerns there. But otherwise, I mean, that's about it for the financial statements. And I'm going to go over another report, but I'm going to pause if we have any other questions to talk about on the financial statement.
Do we have any questions, Greg, Isidore?
Yeah, I do.
Go ahead.
I guess you mentioned the, what was it, 460,510 loss for the...
Yeah, the Cypress Way. Yep.
Cypress. So does anything come on, since it was essentially a swap, does anything come up positive on the other side for the property that they relinquished or no?
So that sits on the city side. So what we did is the CDA transferred to the city. Mm-hmm. The city consolidated a number of lots and then transferred that to Centro. And then the Centro headquarters went to the city, but now we're consolidating land and the South Transfer Point, the Centro Hispano headquarters, the 818 office building, those all get transferred to the LLC that MRCDC will own when we do the tax credit transaction. Okay. So it's really complicated and it passes through the city and there's a big time lag in between. So you're not really going to see it cleanly in here.
Okay. I was just curious about, you know, how that works. Okay. Thanks.
Greg, do you have any questions?
Well, I guess the other question is, so does anyone know what the value of the property that Central vacated versus?
It's a little over $1 million.
Okay. All right. But I'm just, you know, I know that was a complicated transaction, so just trying to see where it shows up and that. Okay. Yep. Thanks.
No, we keep Vasi on our toes.
Yep. I hear you.
Greg, do you have any questions?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay, I just wanted to confirm, Vasu, you know, this is a very strong balance sheet that CVA has. Mm-hmm. And I think I've asked for this in the past, but my understanding is that, you know, we've got most of the assets, $59 million, are in buildings and equipment, but the market value of those buildings is substantially higher because mm-hmm. you carry them at the lower cost of market, right? Mm-hmm. So that's true, correct?
Correct, yeah.
So it would be nice to know, just in terms of the strength of the balance sheet, I think I've asked staff for this, you know, what the market value of those properties are, because they're probably, you know, cost, because a lot of them are highly depreciated. So the value of those properties is probably closer to 80 or 100 million.
So, sorry to jump in. So on that side, one of the things we're doing as part of the master planning effort that we're working with Baker Tilly, our low-income housing tax credit consultants, is to do that analysis of the rest of the portfolio, not looking at the buildings, but as what is the development potential of them? Because I think, to what you said, that's where a lot of the value is actually going to sit with these, is not the value of the building as it is today. It's what is the development potential from it. So we are working on that front with them, but we don't have it now.
Okay. Thank you. I mean, I think that's good information, either the potential development or the market value now, which shows that the balance sheet would show that the balance sheet's much stronger than really for CVA than presented. And we also have low liabilities, $13 million in liabilities. So current ratio is very, very strong, and cash of $10 million. So that's, you know, it's all good. Okay, those are, I think, and Ann answered my questions about the differences in terms of the, you know, the income differences. So go ahead, Avasi, and continue. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm gonna share another document. So I'm trying to see, okay, how do I unshare first? You know, news team. So I'm like, okay,
it should be towards the top of your screen, a little red button that says unshare.
Okay, I'm not able to see it somehow.
Is the other document on the other tab?
It's on the same. I changed it, but I think I was just sharing the document. So maybe. Oh no, it's like I was gonna click to leave meeting. That's not how. Okay. Oh yikes, where do I share it? Okay, I closed out of it.
If you're looking to report the reportings and insights from the 2023 audit, that green for the cover page, we are seeing it.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's what I wanted to share. Okay. Are you able to see now? You are seeing that?
Yes, we are.
Okay, I was not able to see it. So, okay, awesome. So yeah, reporting and insights from 2023 audit. So this is another document or a report that we issue as part of the audit, and it's specifically addressed to the Board of Commissioners, you know, for the CDA. But definitely, you know, you should read through that. It talks about Baker Tilly's responsibilities. It talks about audit status, our approach, key areas, focus, any significant findings. So we didn't have any significant findings. Here is another important paragraph about internal control matters. And this is really important for you to note that usually as part of the audit, when I said, you know, we do it in two phases. The first phase, we look at the process controls. And at that time, if we find any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in the CDA's internal control, we report them here. So I'm happy to share that, you know, there were no deficiencies that we consider to be a material weakness. So really nice and clean. we didn't even have to make any audit entries. So the numbers that are being shared with you on a monthly, quarterly basis, they are good numbers because those are the same numbers that we audited, and we didn't find any changes, you know, that we needed to make to those numbers. So that's a really good thing. It's hard to achieve this. Trust me when I say that. The city as a whole implemented a new accounting standard. It's called GASB 96 for subscription-based information technology arrangements. So as we had to include that for the CDA financials too, but the CDA side, it didn't have a huge impact. There were maybe just very small one or two contracts or arrangements that were included in the CDA's financial statement. So not significant, but since the city implemented, you know, it was being implemented across all the segments, including the CDA. Some other things we, again, this is another paragraph we talk about, you know, these are audited by other auditors, and we say, yep, this is audited by SBA, and we rely on that. These are some non-attest services that we provide to the city. And again, since CDA kind of is under the umbrella of the city, we automatically have to disclose those, some advisory services and some other things, other projects that we do. Not necessarily directly we did that for the CDA, but we have to disclose that since, you know, we do it for the city. Here are some other resources. You know, if you want to click on the link and try to use those, there's the representation letter. If we were to make any entries, you know, we would be disclosing them here, but since we didn't make, there is nothing to disclose. Here's your client service team. So Andrea Jensen, who is the principal managing the city and the CDA's audit, myself, and then some other people. So if you ever have any questions, concerns, anything, you can reach out to any one of us, and we'd be happy to help you answer any of your questions. Upcoming accounting changes, new accounting standards that are coming up. So there are two of them that are going to be applicable for the 12/31/24 audit, and we have been working with all our clients to get them up to speed on that, and city is already aware of that. City, we have discussed that with the city also. So again, city is going to implement, so CDA automatically will implement too. And there will be some changes to how we account for compensated absences. So accounting for sick leave and vacation and, you know, that kind of stuff. So there might be some changes to the numbers. They might actually go up slightly is what our expectation is. I think that's about it for this report. And that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions, Greg or Isidore, about the second report?
Nope, none for me.
Okay. Let me just ask you lastly, Vasvi, are there any concerns, any issues that we should be concerned about with this audit as CDA commissioners?
Nope, not at all. You know, we have been receiving all the information that we ask for, we promptly received that, no concerns, all the staff and everybody has been supportive. We didn't have any independence-related findings or any material weaknesses or anything. So I don't have any concerns.
Okay, great. That sounds great. I know you've been with us for a while, so thanks for all your help and thanks for all your work. And thank you, Anne, for all your work. And just want to confirm, this government accounting, it is accrual accounting, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. CDA follows full accrual accounting.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions before we let Vasvi go? Okay, hearing none. Thanks a lot for taking the time, and we'll probably see you next year.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye, have a good day.
Okay, do we need a motion to approve this audit or?
Not at this meeting. There'll be a resolution at the CDA board meeting to accept the audit.
Okay, great. Does anybody else have any questions for Anne?
No, it's just nice to have things cleaned up and cleared up and no issues to report.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And strong balance sheet. Like I said, the more I look at our balance sheets, very ironclad, as they say. Okay. Thanks everybody for joining us, the staff and Isidore and Greg. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
I move to adjourn.
Thank you. And a second?
I will second that motion.
Okay. Unless there are objections, I'll ask for unanimous consent. And hearing none, this motion is approved and we are over. Thanks for joining us, everyone.
All right. See everyone next week.